This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
So good to have you all here, managing comebacks in QC. Let's give a high five out to our great sponsors today. You know, each shop has its own customer record. So when multi-shop owners use Shopware, they're always in the system. Blow customers away by pulling up their records in a flash on the web at getshopware.com. Hey, are you up to date on your training? Well, Delphi Technologies is proud to offer over 30 courses run by ASE-certified technicians for you, the professional. Turn to the OE aftermarket supplier with over 100 years of experience. Inquire today, DelphiAftermarket.com. Let's look at my great panel for today. Aaron Woods, Extra Mile Auto Care, Stillwater, Oklahoma, and coach for the Institute. Hey, Aaron.
Hey, always great to be here, Carm. Thanks for having me back.
Always a pleasure. Clint White's here from Coaching with Integrity. Hey, Clint.
Hey, guys. Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Jim Fleischman, Automotive Alley, Arcade, New York. Hey, Jim.
Carm, pleasure. Always. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you, my friend. And Deidre Parker, owner-operator, Chloe's Auto Repair, Woodstock, Georgia, multi-shop owner group. Hey, hi, Deidre.
Hey, Carm. Thanks for having me here.
First timer, love to welcome first timers on the show. Well, look at how do we minimize comebacks? I know one thing for sure. This group wants to talk about this very bad. I have a couple of things that I would love to know as the discussion goes forward. And that is the fact that we're human and we all make mistakes every day. But how do we address them? And how do we make a difference for our customers' experience because we've gotten better, tighter, smarter, we're managing it? And then there's always the do right rule, do the right thing, give your people authority to fix these kinds of things. So let's just jump in this thing. Let's not beat around the bush. Clint, I believe that one of the most important things we have to do is just address it as quickly as we can.
Absolutely. I think speed and making it a priority is going to be a key. I want to lead off today with, I understand you probably have already titled this episode and we call them comebacks, but I truly believe in order to have a correct mindset and I think then a correct resolution to this topic, I think we need to rename it. I hate to get all weird on you. They're not comebacks. They're second opportunities. There's second opportunities to shine. There's second opportunities to potentially redeem yourself as a shop. It's a second opportunity in many instances to sell more needed services on a vehicle. So that right there, I think, is key. We'll put that as a platform for today, is the second opportunity and how to resolve. And yes, Carm, you are correct. We've got to get on it right away. If we let it sit and stew, it only gets worse. So prioritization is key.
I don't think a lot of people in this industry would consider it a second opportunity. Especially if the name in everybody's head is a comeback or, right. Hey, it's back potentially for the same particular reason. It's a tough one to try to say it's a second opportunity. I don't know what your guys' thoughts or feelings on that, but that's a tough one.
It's all how it's approached with the customer, right? That's what Clint's, I think, more so trying to get across. And I'm actually going to steal this from Clint, and I'm going to give him credit for it. But I remember having this conversation with one of our advisors. Mm-hmm. And when we were talking about comebacks or second opportunities, I guess, as we've coined it, we have to have the mentality that it may not be our fault, but it is our problem.
Absolutely.
And we have to attack this from the onset of empathy, with resolve, and with quickness. You know, at the end of the day, the evidence will always be what the evidence is. And sometimes that evidence may come out with an opportunity to have integrity and take care of that customer through a warranty experience. Or it may be an opportunity to, like what Clint said, sell more needed services on the vehicle. But that's not going to change from when that vehicle comes back, right? The problem is what the problem is. The evidence is what the evidence is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But oftentimes we find is what differentiates the experience to the customer is how we choose to handle it. And
no,
I think that's what Clint's going after is approaching it with a mindset that this is just another opportunity to meet or exceed our customers' expectations. And I think it starts with the mindset of, as an advisor, of course, you're the first contact that picks up the phone. You're that first person that kind of catches that brunt of that customer's frustration. And so it starts right there, that first sentence of how do I respond to this upset customer? And that sets the tone for the rest of the interaction. And I think have to have that mindset of, it may not be my fault, but this is absolutely my problem and I'm going to treat it as such.
And what that is, Aaron, the word we're looking for today is humility. We have to exercise, operate, and embrace humility in our shops. It's okay to default to, Mr. Customer, I apologize. We thought we had it fixed, and let's get back in there and let's give this a second opportunity to find out what potentially has gone wrong. And I'm going to do everything in my power to make this right.
Right.
Shops today, they struggle with owning the issue because if I admit fault, it's like, I don't know where this came from, but if you ever get in a car accident, whatever you do, don't admit fault. Shame on you. Don't do it. That's our society. And I'm the first to admit fault. And if then I'm right, I've got a leg to stand on. But I tell you what, if I'm wrong and I'm defensive up front with my clients, I lose. We lose. So humility.
Yeah, absolutely. Deidre, what are your thoughts?
And urgency. Because the way that we train here is like my service advisors are trained. If someone calls and they automatically think it's a recheck that we didn't fix their car, I've trained them. And our response is always, the great news is if it's anything that we've already repaired, it's under warranty. Do I need to help you with a tow? We can get it back in here and look at it as soon as it gets here. We put your car in front of everybody else's.
I 100% agree with that. And so let's almost kind of flip script here, right? Because there's this, that's the great thing about this topic is there's multiple facets to this, right? There's the customer approach. There's the procedure approach from the internal side, right? And so several conversations that I have with shop owners, and I being one of them, have went through this myself, is how do we create accountability? How do we create accountability within our shop? Of the culture that when something comes back, I mean, you can talk about this, like we as panelists can sit here and talk about this, but I was only in my shop for 5 days last month. So how do I know that what I'm sitting here talking about is what our people are doing? And so I think it starts with that. How do we establish healthy accountability within our shop and then that mindset of taking care of it? And I think a lot of people are scared to do that, especially in the market right now where the technicians, it's like, oh, you know, how do I tell my technician that he did something bad? How do I have these difficult conversations with them? And I think it starts with we as owners, we have to establish a healthy culture of accountability. You know, accountability is not always a negative thing. I think we want to attach a negativity to it because oftentimes with accountability comes difficult conversations. But if we approach it with the healthy, constructive culture of accountability, I think it's a great thing. I think people in general, employees and teammates, they want accountability. Like they want to know, what are the measurements for which am I, you know, going to be graded? How do I do a great job? We as owners fail oftentimes to set that accountability. And then we want to get upset when those marks aren't being reached. So what are y'all's thoughts?
I want to just chime in here a little bit for a couple of things. First and foremost, on the accountability note, the author, Patrick Lencioni, brought to light the concept. I believe it's the only place I've read it is peer-to-peer accountability. And multiple books that he's written detail that concept. The machine runs itself. We have the ability as a team to say, hey, coworker of mine, teammate, equal, hold me accountable to the process. Once the machine runs itself, then shop owners like Aaron can be in his shop for 5 days in the month because he has a healthy culture of peer-to-peer accountability. One of the reasons why I know this is an issue, I have the opportunity to talk with advisors, technicians, owners, and in my line of work, what I do. And I've had multiple conversations with technicians who are quitting or have quit, and I do an exit interview and looking to build our team and how did we miss? And I have had multiple technicians tell me, I'm quitting this place not because of pay, not because of benefits, not because of tools, not because of heat or air conditioning or doors or any of that. I'm quitting because there's no accountability here. Such and such over here gets to guess on a car, throw parts at it, doesn't work, not his fault. I have to figure it out. We are losing technicians because we don't have accountability. So if you want to keep a good quality crew, hold them all accountable to the same standard across the board.
Amen.
Amen. Yes, absolutely. And I also keep a log on this. I keep a log, you know, the original RO, the technician, what was his write-up? who was the service advisor. That way you can see what went wrong. And I do hold my technicians accountable, and I will back flag them. And they all sign that in the contract when they come to work for me.
Yeah, and there's a tool that I've seen used for years and years. It's the comeback log, like you're stating, but we tie that to a performance incentive or a team
Correct.
Bonus. And so just as an example, the team, if we all hit our production numbers for the month and we have no more than, say, one comeback per guy or whatever percentage you want to use where you feel like your healthy marker is, then we all get that team bonus. Let's say that everyone stands to earn an extra $700 on their check this month. But if any one team member exceeds that, then we all lose as a team. Meaning, as I'm working on a car and I look at one of my coworkers not doing a thing or doing it incorrectly or spinning out in the whirlpool of diagnostic chaos and confusion, I am more inclined to go over there, even though I'm flat rate and on my own, I'm going to go over there and help this guy because, well, it's the right thing to do. And I got a little bit of money on the line.
Absolutely.
That's a great idea. Yes.
So opportunity, I think it all started with Clint saying it's a second opportunity. Let me summarize these last few minutes. It's an opportunity to learn, to make right, to train, to record, to discover. Is it a part? Repair? What is it? We have the right tools. Opportunity to discover we have the right tools. And what about, okay, that shortcut didn't work. So I love the word opportunity. I think it fits somewhere in here for sure. And I think there needs to be, or there should be, a learning curve for each and every return that comes back. And Deidre, that's the key, the logging of this, because you can take a spreadsheet, sort it a million different ways. You could find a brand, a part, a supplier, something that may signal that there is a problem.
I absolutely agree. And to, you know, kind of tie up to this point, to me, there are two types of when these problems arise. They're derived from two different places, right? And I think that we oftentimes assume that they're derived from the individual. And sometimes that is, in fact, the case. But what about our processes? How many of these communication errors, you know, because first, I guess, let me back up. Let's talk about, you know, let's use the word comeback, right? Like, what is a comeback? How do we define a comeback? What's a comeback to Clint's shop might not be a comeback to mine, might not be a comeback in Jim's shop. So I think at first we have to define what is a comeback. Now, a comeback or a second opportunity, I guess, in our shop is, you know, anything that is a communication error with a customer. You know, did we fail to properly communicate to a customer? Mm-hmm. That is a comeback. If a technician left a wrench in a car, like, I'm sorry, if I hire somebody to come paint my house and to leave the paintbrush on my front porch, that's comeback, right?
Yeah.
So we document that any reason why a customer has to return is negatively impacted by the customer experience. And if that has to do with communication or workmanship, that's a comeback. Now, we're not defining a comeback in our shop as a year later, we have a water pump that we installed, right?
I don't think there's anybody that would consider that.
I agree. And so I think it starts with what is a comeback, right? Like, how do we define this within our shop? And then for the several parts of that, what are the processes that we have in place? And I'll give you an example here. Last week, we had a customer that left our shop and came back and had a check engine light on. So the customer immediately brings the vehicle back, right? And we, you know, customer's got a check engine light on. Well, your comeback process has to start during the initial repair. Right? Mm-hmm. What kind of documentation are you doing during the initial visit that you have to be able to hold your people accountable to should a customer have to return? To dive into this example, we had a customer come back, said, I have a check engine light on. The first thing that we do is we pull up the intake inspection. So we're going back to the original repair order when the customer was here and then pulling up because we document the condition of this vehicle. We document the mileage. We document it with a photo, the instrument cluster. Before any repairs are even ever performed on this vehicle, we know exactly what condition and what lights are on this dash. So that's when we were able to basically go back through our processes and find exactly where the fault lied there within, you know. And so I was able to pull people in my office one after another and, you know, had a moment to educate them. And come to find out, it was actually the technician who's a younger tech that didn't understand, you know, he takes a picture of the dash after the repairs are done and they're supposed to be compared, right? Mm-hmm. He didn't compare them. Check engine light was clearly on. So it was great to be able to go back through our processes and say, okay, vehicle arrived. picture, no check engine light. Technician uploaded a picture of this instrument cluster post-repair, clearly a check engine light. I mean, it's black and white at that point. And it was just a moment for us to sit down and we talk about the why. Why do we do what we do? Why do you take a picture of that dash? And so that we can facilitate an exceptional customer experience. But the great thing is, though, is that if you're not doing the things on the initial visit to build the accountability, then you have nothing to stand on when the vehicle should come back to even go back and correct it, right? And so it starts here so that accountability can be applied here.
Yeah. So Aaron, the pictures and the documentation that you're talking about is all done through your DVI. I'm only assuming that everyone that's on this this event is involved in some sort of DVI. So, you know, here, if you're pulling a vehicle and a check engine light's on and you're pulling those codes out, you're documenting everything. We take pictures of everything that's in there, absolutely, regardless what's happening. So once we document all of that and we made a repair, there might be, we all know, there could be 20 different codes, and we have to start by clearing the codes and trying to get stuff to come back and going after that. And then a customer leaves and you know, like you said, 2 weeks later, a week later comes back, my light's back on. Well, when you bring it back in and you identify that, yep, hey, this is one or two of the codes out of the 15 or 20 that needed more time to drive to come back, it should have been relayed to the particular client that, hey, be aware, this light's going to come back on because we didn't invest hours and hours and hours of driving this. And that could be part of the failure process for the comeback. It wasn't relayed to that person. So now they're coming back. That's back like a hornet.
Speaks to how well your sales staff is trained and how well your production staff knows what they do matters to the sales staff. It's a concept that I've been teaching in shops for years. It's called connecting the gears, right? There's a lash there, front of the house, back of the house. If you do have a technician that does take a picture of 10 codes, clear them all, do our testing, find an initial sensor that failed, that has got to be very clearly articulated in the technician's notes in the DVI that goes to the advisor first, that goes to the consumer, that says, this is the initial step, further testing will be needed. And then from there, the advisor can counsel the customer and say, hey, I want to let you know there was 15 codes up front, so you're down to 14. None of them have come back yet, but I want to let you know the likelihood of the light coming back on is pretty high. So don't worry. Don't be scared. Give them peace of mind that when it does, get it back in here. I'll do a free code retrieval for you to see which one it is. And that'll give us an idea what the next level of testing is going to be. It's not a comeback if you do it like that. It's simply a second opportunity.
Yeah. And, no, it's your part of your process there. Yeah.
And there's something that we're talking about, and I touched base with it on my last comment. Where is all of this being done at? It's being done on the customer's initial visit. Yeah. So if you don't do the things in the initial visit with the documentation and the stories and the notes, and you're not doing a code scan and you're not walking around this vehicle and you're not taking pictures of the instrument cluster, then, you know, to tie into our deal, managing the quality control process and comebacks, you can't. I'm sorry. I mean, as a shop owner, you can get upset. You can pull all your staff together and, why did this happen? And now you know, but you can't, you're not fixing that. That's not fixing anything.
This isn't a DVI class, right, Aaron?
Right.
But the reality is, and this is why as a coach, I probably stand out in the industry as the guy that puts DVI on a pedestal and says, you do this right the way that Aaron does it. You do it right. Yeah. All these other things tend to work out very, very well. But when we look at a DVI, like a digital version of a paper inspection, click, 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 check, 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 check. One picture here, one picture there, one picture there. I've satisfied my minimum. You might as well go back to paper, folks. You do it right, it changes the dynamic of your shop.
That's correct.
And everybody's expectation is set from that point on.
Absolutely.
You know, they'll get upset if they don't get a good DVI.
Yes.
Right. You talk about self-managing accountability, right? How do I be out of the shop for 5 days or be in the shop for 5 days last month to have the machine roll? Why? Because if I'm a technician and I'm taking a picture of that instrument cluster and that's getting logged on somewhere and I clearly have a light on, like, do you think that I'm going to be paying attention to that type of stuff? Like if literally my name is on this picture as I upload it, like that's almost like innate natural accountability right there.
It just naturally works.
Yeah, it naturally works. It's amazing when we have systems and processes in place. And so when somebody came to me, I was at a conference and they said, I'm having trouble managing my comebacks. What do I do? And I looked right at him and I said, you may not have a person, you know, personnel problem. You may have a systems and a processes problem. And a lot of times your systems and your processes will fix the personnel problem.
So speaking of systems and processes, I think we could move this conversation towards what's something we can do to prevent. What is the greatest prevention tool aside from initial documentation? Remember that DVI is the snapshot of the current condition on arrival. You picture everything you can. Now we've got that. Now what do we do with it? We have to have a final QC process that works in tandem with that. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what, guys, anybody here on the panel or anybody here watching, I can't see your hands. Do you have Colonel Sanders babysit his chickens? I mean, do you have the technician recheck his own work? Doesn't work. So we have to have, again, peer-to-peer accountability where somebody else follows a procedure, a documented procedure, and we check these things on the aftercare on the outtake of the vehicle and confirm they're all the boxes are checked.
We do.
We back that up with the DVI, like Aaron does.
We have a general service technician that goes in behind. He does a code scan. He does another picture of that instrument cluster. Matter of fact, now we don't do this on any customer visual surfaces, but let's say we did an oil pan gasket, right? That QC process, that guy has to put that vehicle back up on a lift. They have a white marker. They put an X on that oil pan, and then they take a picture of it. And
that's a good process.
My name is attached to it, but we actually do both, Clint. We have the technician do their outtake process, and then we have the a QC process because it's not our GS or you're oftentimes your person doing that last QC is not your ASE master certified technician, right? They're following a process. Yep. Now, not to say you couldn't have that built in, but the technician's responsibility is to document that the condition is solved. Came in for a check engine light, had code PO174, fuel trims lean. That technician needs to document that those fuel trims are now back within spec with a picture posted to that technician outtake. My QC guy, he's just looking everything over. He's doing one final code scan just in case any pending codes were there that haven't turned the light back on. You know, he's writing an X on the part, taking a picture. Yes, that part was replaced. He's vacuuming out the driver's side floorboard. He's wiping down the dash and he's getting a handwritten thank you card from the service advisor. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. Put it on the dash, send it. So it's all about processes and procedures.
Yeah, I have a shop foreman that does my QC as well. My general service will go over everything, but my shop foreman verifies the repair before the vehicle leaves the shop.
So consider this. There's this, not debate necessarily, but the question of what sort of qualifications do you need to be the comeback preventer, right? GS tech or an A-level master tech. I tell you what, let me open your eyes a little bit. Your uneducated, non-technical customers are very, very good at finding where you messed up. They find it because they drive it. They find it because they look for drips and spots. They find it because it doesn't shift correctly. It doesn't take a genius or a scientist to go, that ain't right. So I don't necessarily need my A-level tech to read, to actually do that final QC. Should he verify his repairs? 1,000%. Absolutely. And I've been a technician for a long, long time. I can tell you that car comes back in my bay after my final test drive and I'm looking for leaks and I want to make sure because again, my name is on it, not just the company name. And now from there, I hand it over to one of my peers. They can be a GS. It's fine. They can be an apprentice and give them the opportunity to identify where I might have missed. Mm-hmm. I think that's the healthiest model.
So as somebody listening or watching this is going to ask the question, well, how much time do you guys find being spent some of this? If it's a GS or if it's a shop foreman, like Deidre said, how much time is somebody going to invest into each one of these cars? Is it 30 minutes of time? Is it embedded in these jobs? I mean, what are you guys doing in this process?
So when the whatever time we invest in it, depending whether it's a general service or my shop foreman, typically a technician will recheck his work, but the shop foreman has to final verify the repair before it leaves the shop. And the shop foreman will go from vehicle to vehicle. Typically on a day, he's pretty good. He'll take, anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes, depending on what the repair is. And sometimes he will test drive them after the repair to verify that everything, no noises and clunks. So that's strictly his job.
And it's stereotypical about, about that timeline of what we're going to invest is making sure something's right.
Correct.
I'll give you my timeline on the QC process, and I'll give you my answer as long as it takes.
Bingo.
Right.
To me, it's not, because what is more damaging to our reputation and to our company is should that customer have to return back to my shop for anything.
Correct.
Do not be tempted to have analysis paralysis and where we get into where we have to track. We track everything, clock in, clock out, right? It's all analysis. This one here, I tell you what, you got a single mama and three crying kids standing in your waiting room because her car broke down or her wheel fell off and she is upset. And I tell you what, I'll pay cash to make that go away. I wish that had never happened. I don't care how long it took. You do it right every time.
Right. No, I absolutely agree. And so I guess let's switch gears a little bit here and let's talk about no matter how many processes and procedures we put in place, right? Mistakes happen. You know, I think somebody mentioned at the beginning of the panel, like we are human. There are going to be mistakes. Like I can talk about my QC process all day long. Well, I also mentioned last week, we had a customer come back with a check engine light on, right? So it does happen. So how do we manage that? And so I wanted to talk about, because I'm sure there's a lot of people out here listening to this live or later that's going to say, well, that's all fine and dandy, but what happens if we do? What's the acceptable measurement there? For us, it's 2% of cars. And we track that to every technician. So we have a scorecard that we fill out every single week through the shop management system. I won't name names of who we're with, but most of your shop management systems out there can track job categories. And so should a vehicle come back, it gets a return inspection assigned to it. The return inspection, that technician is to go back and reinspect it. From there, if we determine that it is a comeback type related issue, that job title gets changed to a comeback. And that's
so that's what you have labeled in there as a return inspection. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely.
So that's your flag in your,
That is our flag. And so at the end of the week, we can pull a sales by job category report and then see that we had, you know, two jobs labeled come back with the technician's initials. That's what goes reported on that scorecard. And then every Monday morning, we have a meeting. We have a technician production meeting, and that scorecard gets blasted up there. Not to that one technician. No, sir. No, sir. Everybody's scorecard gets blasted to everybody that's in that meeting.
Peer to peer, boys.
Peer to peer. It's calculated as a formula. So we enter in all the KPIs, and it's not just comebacks. We track build hours, we track efficiency, proficiency, all of that. But one of those measurements is it'll calculate car count versus the comebacks, and it's a rolling 13-week average. I think it's fair to say that everybody's going to have a bad week, right? I mean, you might have a week where you have two comebacks, but then you might have, you know, several others, and so, you know, that don't. So we'll have a rolling 13-week average, and that is how we grade each one of our technicians. On a rolling 13-week average, your expectation is a 2% or less on your comebacks.
You know, nothing tells a customer they need a new part faster than when they see a worn or broken one in their hands. Now, how do you do that in the digital age? Well, it's actually very easy. Thanks to DVX, you can send photos and videos within its messenger platform. It's like nothing else you've ever seen in an auto repair SMS before. Take the best of an Amazon-like experience and use it in your shop to show customers how great you are. DVX also makes it easy for customers to drop you a quick text or answer in the messenger bubble that arises from the repair order. It's like magic. Customers love seeing what they need to do and giving you a quick answer. You'll see your business's potential right in front of you. Your customers get on with their day, and you get back to the repair. Everybody wins. It's time. Take it from me. GetShopWare.com. As the trusted aftermarket brand for over 100 years, Delphi Technologies is by your side for every step of the repair process. The Delphi journey doesn't stop once the parts are ordered. Wherever your journey takes you, our quality parts gives you ease of mind when getting your customer's vehicle back on the road. Technicians know and trust Delphi as a quality brand. Each product undergoes rigorous testing to not only meet OE standards, but also enhance it in each opportunity. From 700 hours of spray testing on chassis components to fuel pumps tested for reliability up to 150,000 miles. And safety and reliability is paramount to help vehicles drive cleaner, better, and further throughout their lives. Delphi is also committed in developing products and services to prepare technicians for the future. Take advantage of how-to videos on YouTube, technician-led trainings, and our technical support line, and more. Turn to the aftermarket parts supplier with over 100 years of OEM trust and quality. Learn more about Delphi. Visit DelphiAftermarket.com. So when you get together with your peoples and we talk about the fact that, hey, Look at this, guys. We're at 1.25. It's been an incredible 13 rolling weeks. Do you go back and look at where some of the gaps are, the, you know, to accountability, to training, to potentially quality parts, the QC process, communication with the customer so that they understand what we really did and what could possibly happen next? Do you find out what all that is? Do your team members in the shop and front of counter get together and talk about how to make it better?
Just yesterday, you know, my team was wanting, everybody's like, oh, we need to, you know, let's increase car count. Let's increase car count. And so I developed this paper yesterday and I presented it to my entire team. And I said, you know, essentially it's a, we call it the IDS model, which I'm sure, you know, anybody out there that's EOS oriented, identify, discuss, and solve. And I challenged my team because I said, if we want to increase car count, then we have to increase efficiency and we have to increase our processes. So my team now has scheduled 3 to 5 meetings in which they will go out. I am not going to be a part of these meetings because I am challenging my team to develop their process. And I said, you have 3 to 5 meetings to come back to me and to present to me 3 areas of needed improvement on how we can improve our business and how we can improve our efficiency and our comebacks. And I don't mean like, oh, we're just going to order better parts. No.
Right.
You're going to come back to me and you're going to present the entire process. And it's funny. I'll say this, that when you give your team ownership of developing the process, how much easier it is to manage the accountability. Because I can sit here in my office and I can say, okay, yep, this is how we're going to do it, right? And I can type out this thing line by line and I can fire off that email and I can walk out there and crack that whip. But there's no ownership, right? Yep. There's no ownership there. So I challenged my team and I said, you go do this. And when you come back to me, I want you to have the answer of how do we make this better? So to answer your Carm's question, absolutely we do. But I think you don't sit there and do it yourself. Challenge your team to do it and give them ownership of the responsibility.
I smell a new episode right there, Carm. How your team can run it like they own it. And you can come in 5 days a month. I think Aaron would probably do that show with you.
Well, hell, Jim, you only work 16, right?
That's those exactly are rookie numbers. Right. We need to get those numbers reeled back in there, Jim. 5.
But to all the people that are out there listening, I've been there. I remember having a conversation with Clint. It was probably, 8 months ago?
Not that long ago.
I said, Clint, how do we fix this? How do we fix this? Yeah. Right? And to be fair, how you fix it is you look at yourself in the dang mirror. Because 90% of the time, the reason why that our people are not hitting our expectations is because of us. Right?
That is correct.
Set the expectation. Stay with it. Stay consistent. You have to stay consistent. You can't walk out there and say, all right, 2% comebacks, right? And then track it for 2 weeks and then, you know, absolutely not. You have to stay consistent with your expectations every single week. That scorecard's on that computer, is on that TV screen, whether they like it or they don't. That's the expectation.
Thank you for this incredible dialogue. Some of the talking points that Clint sent in was about comeback customer care, was about listening to the customer, apologizing for the inconvenience. And I'm going to set these up, Clint, and I want you all to have a dialogue about this. Communicate the plan of resolution for them. Provide updates to them. Offer a goodwill gesture and follow up with the customer. So with those in mind, let's bring this episode to, not that we'll ever come up with a perfect conclusion to this discussion, but let's put a bow on it. Let's talk about this.
So each one of those topics really points towards being customer-centric and operating again with the spirit of humility across the board. Our team has to embrace the spirit of humility, and it's not just for the advisor to do. Everybody involved. I can't tell you how many times running a shop and standing at the counter and dealing with an upset customer, and I go to my tech and hoping that he'll be at the ready, and he's like, that's not my problem. You got to pay me again? I'm going to clock into that, because if not, I'm not looking at it. So we have to have our team with everyone's head screwed on straight and everyone rowing in the same direction. We have to be customer-centric. Like you said, Carm, how do we handle that? How do we customer care, comeback customer care, listening to the customer? This is a delicate situation. Give the customer the opportunity to explain their problems and their concerns. Listen to it from their perspective. It's going to help you understand the bigger issue. And ultimately, it demonstrates that you value their input or their feedback. apologizing for the inconvenience, even if it wasn't your fault. It is your problem. Right. Own it, guys. Just own it. And then clearly communicate a plan for resolution, which means that you're going to give them steps. Now, this one is hard because we want to sweep this under the rug. We don't want to tell them what we're going to do because maybe we don't know what we're going to do. But I'm going to list out exactly what tests I'm going to do. I'm going to show them the initial inspection. I'm going to let them know there's a secondary inspection that will be provided to them because we operate with a core value of absolute transparency. We hide nothing from nobody. And then from there, provide updates, very regular updates, ask for permission to text, to call, to email, smoke signals. I don't know what you guys do, but we communicate regularly with updates. And how about offering a goodwill gesture? We're many times so focused on the dollar, so focused on the profit, so focused on what are we going to lose on this? Why not go the extra mile with your consumer? It doesn't necessarily have to be monetarily, but some sort of a goodwill gesture. It could be just as simple as paying for a rental or giving them something to drive while theirs is broke down. And then lastly, after it's all said and done, please follow up with your customer. 3 days, 30 days. These are industry standards. And again, that contact and that conversation is done with a spirit of humility.
Well said.
Well said.
So a question for the team. If you were working for the Ritz-Carlton, they would give every employee a budget to resolve any customer issue, perceived or otherwise, right? And do you have authority at your counter to do something that is that, if you will, goodwill gesture?
Yes.
What do you do, Deidre?
So each person at the counter has the authority to do what they feel like is best and is going to take care of the customer. Because if you talk to the customer long enough, they're going to tell you what they feel like would be right to them. If it's not anything crazy, absolutely, they have the authority to do it.
You're going
to
stand behind them.
Absolutely.
Up to how many dollars have they ever spent?
I think the most that they've ever spent maybe is $300, but it was well worth it.
What was that?
A gift card for a future repair.
Okay.
We have a thing called Cherish the Customer. So each one of our service advisors give $200 a month that they can use as they see fit to cherish the customer. Could be anything about, you know, applying a discount should they see fit to, you know, hey, we would like to really go, you know, above and beyond and go wash this customer's car. You know, we'd like to fill up a tank to get whatever it is that they deem necessary to facilitate an exceptional customer experience. They have $200. Now,
that's a great idea.
With that being said, whatever they don't use, they get half. So it's a way to like kind of gatekeep that a little bit of not just, you know, well, I just want to toss out this discount because it's, you know, the 27th of the month and I have $200 to use, right? I mean, so it serves as a gatekeep a little bit there. But absolutely, I mean, we have to empower our people at the front counter, right? At the end of the day, they're the ones that are running the business. We're just back here looking at spreadsheets. Those guys are the ones that are delivering the experience.
You know what I love about the wording, cherish the customer? In my mind, there's a mental map that reminds me that my paycheck comes from this person.
Absolutely.
Now, is something like that, Aaron, you know, is that process something you put on a repair order? Something that it's physically seen by the individual client that when they go to, you know, so it's on, it's documented. So it's on there. They can see it.
And to be quite frank, I don't need a phone call every time that they want to do something, right? I mean, that's what it is. It's a, you have $200. Why are you calling me? Take care of the customer. And so I walked into the office this morning. One of my advisors was putting a cherish the customer deal on there for a, I think they donated a tag bowl. You know, customer came in and got some work done and they noticed that his license plate bulb was out. So they just fix it. So they'll put it on the ticket, cherish the customer discount and discount it back down and tell the customer, hey, we put a license plate bulb while your car was here.
Look at, of course, the Aftermarket Radio Network and Hunt Demarest. I think everyone knows Hunt, who's a CPA and works exclusively for shop owners. Episode 45, I got to tell you a really cool story about that in our independent group here in Buffalo. It was the last breakfast meeting. They spent an entire hour discussing Hunt's episode number 45, which was titled Accounting for Internal and Warranty Work.
Oh, I love that episode. I watched that. We applied it.
And yes, and frankly, you can do all of this work, but if you don't handle it through your financial statements, you're going to lose badly. And there were so many cool tricks not tricks in a bad way, tricks in a good way, and using credit cards, moving it to accounts receivable, because in some cases, we all know there may be a part warranty there. There could be a 24,000 or 36,000 mile warranty. How do we flow this through to the system, but yet get it onto the customer's record? You can't ignore the transaction. And I really recommend, we'll put this in the show notes, the link to Hunt's episode. But if you get a chance, aftermarketradionetwork.com, find Hunt, go to episode 45 and listen. It's actually a perfect bookend to this. You know, we're talking about the people side, the training side of this. Hunt's talking about the financial way that comebacks or warranties should be handled.
Or second opportunities.
Yeah, or second opportunities.
There you go.
We've done a comeback episode a couple of years ago, and I love to recycle this because we have so many new listeners all the time. But, you know, is it, if we were going to the technician training and we want to update ourselves and find out what's new, what's going on with technology, what new ways of fixing the old problems, that's what this is for business people. So let's go around the room. I'll do Deidre, Aaron, Jim, and Clint. Give us just a couple of minutes summary. Did you learn anything? What should we remember to put a great bow on this great episode? Deidre?
I learned a lot here, and I think the processes in the rechecks, if you will, the processes that you have to have in place in order to take care of your customer, because at the end of the day, the customer comes first. You're not in business if you don't have a customer. And you also hold your people accountable as your technicians, front counter, wherever the mistake went, you have to find where the source of failure was so that you can do better and get better and better in it. Not happen, hopefully, again to the same customer, but you know it's going to happen because we all are human.
Well said. Thank you, Aaron.
We started doing something a while back, and I think that sometimes technicians, advisors see customers, not cars. Technicians see cars, not customers. And I think there's a disconnect there. And I think that we as shop owners, we have to find a way to bridge that gap, right? We have to find ways to have the advisor be a take ownership of the car. And we have to find ways for the technician to take ownership of the customer. And, you know, we talk about the bad, the comebacks, right? How many of you shop owners out there listening to this, whether it be now or later, when's the last time that you've pulled your team and your technicians and showed them the 5-star reviews on Google? Because they're just as much a part of that as your advisors are. My point I want to end here with, because we've talked all over the negative side and the process and the procedures, but you have to find a way to give your technicians ownership of the customer, because right, that's where the disconnect is. As the techs see the car, they don't see the customer. Give them those 5-star reviews. Bring them in on the good. Show them the good. When that technician went that extra mile and he made sure that that problem was solved, and then that customer leaves that 5-star review, bring them in on that process.
You know, that should be part of your either weekly or bi-weekly meeting, bringing that up in your meetings, just letting everybody know, hey, here's a great review. Here's a poor review. Here's what happened. And talking about that obviously is a critical piece to, you know, make sure that everyone's successful. But I totally agree, Aaron. I think it's super important to make sure everybody knows if there was a good review, it wasn't one person. It was everybody that made the good review. So, we're all wearing the same jersey. So I think that's important.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I asked someone, I think it was earlier today or yesterday, about the cross-training of a service advisor into the, you know, technology side so that they're more, if you will, inside of what goes through the daily challenges in the bays. And then I wrote down the word as I was listening to Aaron, the word cross-training. And I know that it's not difficult to send a service advisor for technical training. I think it's important. They don't have to know it all. They just got to get the surface of it so they can talk more intelligently and have a better relationship with the technician. But what about the for a technician to go to a class called The Life of a Service Advisor? An hour and a half to 2 hour. Let us walk you down that, a day in the life.
They would probably say, I think I'm rather work on cars. I don't want to have to deal with that. That's probably what they would say. I mean, a lot of people that are doing that, they enjoy fixing cars, but there's a lot of value in seeing what an advisor has to go through on a daily basis.
Problem is, we're not in the car business. We're in the people business, right?
Exactly right, Aaron. I can imagine a class like that at Vision could have 200-300 people in it. because the owner said to the technician, you're going to that class. I've got to have you understand that the pressure that the SA is under is enormous, just as much as you as it comes to the process and the relationship and everything that it takes to get you the job and the hours.
Well, that shop foreman position, you know, that Deidre was talking about, or Aaron, or any of these QC people, if they're not people, it's the wrong person for that job, because you're more than likely going to be face-to-face with the person trying to identify what happened, what can we do better, what information wasn't gathered up to finish that communication and make this person happy. So
it's a bridge position. It's a bridge between the front and the back of the shop, and that person has to have those personality traits that work both ways. Yeah. Jim, your final words.
Honor to be here. I think it's we got great people, but I think everybody in this industry is pre and post driving cars and making sure that their DVIs are filled out right. You know, Aaron made a couple comments with that, and then Clint also in regards to making sure that everything's documented. I mean, that's part of the process, and if that isn't done right at the beginning, then everything starts to fall apart. Communication's key, so I think making sure that we're communicating good and doing the best we can with our team. So
thank you so much, Jim. Clint, final words.
All right, guys, like a good Boy Scout, I always want to leave the campground a little cleaner when we leave than what we found it. I know that either today or in the future, when someone's watching this recording, there's going to be a shop owner that says, I wish I had a process, a QC process. So I want to very quickly give you a 13-point process that you can start with. You can modify, make it your own, but I think it's a great foundation. Get your pen ready. Here you go. Every vehicle. Number one, test drive the vehicle and verify that the primary concern has been resolved. Number two, visually check that all other work has been completed according to the repair order. Now, this is, again, the person doing the QC is following this checklist. Number three, inspect the vehicle to ensure that there are no new scratches, dents, or other new damage. See the intake pictures on your DVI for reference. If you don't have them, I can help you with your DVI, by the way. Number four, verify that the vehicle has been cleaned and is free of any debris or grease, marks, or stains. Number five, verify that all peripheral components that were removed during the repair have been reinstalled and functioning, such as engine covers, air filter box lids, oil caps, etc. Number six, we're halfway there. Check all fluids. All fluids have been topped off to the correct levels, whether they were serviced or not. In my shop, we have a mantra, no fluid leaves low, period. Number seven, inspect the tires to ensure that they've been properly inflated. Number eight, manually retorque the lug nuts if the wheels were removed for any reason. Number nine, check that all warning lights and error codes that have been cleared are not displaying unless previously declined by the customers. Verify all monitors have run and passed. And for God's sakes, learn how to use mode six. Number 10, verify that the oil change sticker is present and accurate. That's a thing. 11, reset the oil life monitor or the maintenance service reminder. Number 12, vacuum the floors, clean the windshield inside and out, refresh the wiper blades if they weren't replaced. Number 13, park the vehicle in the launch pad, remove the seat cover, the floor mat, place a gift and a note for the customer on the dash in plain sight. And guys, I have the technician doing this sign this statement. By following these steps and signing this form, you acknowledge that you are our last line of defense to ensure that this vehicle has been repaired to the highest quality standards and that our client will be 100% satisfied with the repairs we have provided. Guys, make that a part of your process.
Awesome. Put a bow tie on it.
Launch pad. I like that.
It's a launch pad.
I do too.
Don't you like that? Oh, that is so cool. I mean, God, there is so much great stuff in here today.
I was looking forward to this session. I was like, I'm going to eat this up.
Cherish the customer launch pad. I mean, we just dropped the cherries from the tree here. This is great. By the way, we will make sure that those 13 steps are inside the show notes for this episode when it releases as a podcast next Thursday. Wow. Managing comebacks or second opportunities, whatever we choose to call this. Thank you so much to Aaron Woods, Extra Mile Auto Care, Stillwater, Oklahoma, Clint White, Coaching with Integrity, Jim Fleshman, Automotive Alley, Arcade, New York, and Deidre Parker, Chloe's Auto Repair, Woodstock, Georgia. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Hey, see you guys.
Thanks. Pleasure, you guys.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.